There's the whistle. Go, go, go! Second half, my three subs action from the Center Circle Studios.
Joining me on the podcast today is a man whose Gray Man series just turned 10 years old, blew out the birthday candles on that, with 8 books out, Mission Critical now out as well, and another one in the works in 2020, a man who's got a lot in the hopper but taking some time, probably just his lunch break. He's so busy. New York Times bestselling writer Mark Graney joins us on the podcast today. Mark, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thank you for having me.
It's terrific to have you here today, and we've got a lot to talk about and want to talk about. Soccer, obviously, but it's not very often that we get somebody with the credentials that you've earned through the years and you're continuing to write and want to pick your brain on a couple of things. Court Gentry is a well-known character, and he was pulled out of an earlier work of yours, right?
Yeah, that's true. I wanted to be an author, you know, my whole life. It took me 20 years to get published, and I'd written a book called Goon Squad that had this character in it, and I got it in front of an agent, and he really liked the character, and he liked the writing. He just didn't think the story was that marketable, so he's like, you know, if you give me this guy and something else, then maybe I can do something with it. So that ended up being turned into a book called The Gray Man, which was the first Gray Man book back in 2009.
So you said 20 years, and obviously you were writing, but you probably had to support yourself too. What were you doing before you became a world-traveling, world-famous, best-selling author?
Lots of things. I got a degree in political science and international relations, and I did what a lot of people with that degree do. I waited tables and bartended for a really long time. And then I got into different types of sales, but international sales mostly. And then most recently, before I started writing full-time, I worked for Medtronic here in Memphis and in the medical device field with some of our international accounts.
All right. So the political science degree didn't come in too much handy maybe in that particular.
Not for the first 20 years, and then it kicked in.
And then international studies, I'm sure, has been paying off a huge dividends. So you said for 20 years, and your character from the Goon Squad, Court Gentry, catches the eye. You say of an agent?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did that conversation go once you heard that? I mean, did that spark something in your brain, in your heart, to get that kind of encouragement?
Yeah, it was. I always say that I fell down a lot, but always seemed to fall forward. And I got a lot of rejection, as any author does, trying to get published, but there was positives in a lot of those rejections. And I met this agent who I was very well known, and I was, you know, very excited to get something in front of him, very nervous about it. And then when I did, he really liked the writing. He said it was one of the best things that's ever been handed to him at a writer's conference. And then he said, that's not saying a lot, but still, it's what you've written is good. And so that made me run off. And 7 months later, I had The Gray Man, and it took him over. You know, there was like a 2-year period before I actually had a book deal, and another year and a half before it came out. So it's a slower process than some people might think.
You're either a very confident guy or you fake it really well. Did it take you some time to get a tough skin, or have you always had that when it comes to that initial feedback leading up to being able to have this character and be able to run with it for so long?
Yeah, I don't have a tough skin. It's tougher now than it was 10 years ago because, at first it was very difficult. You're very scared to have anybody look at your work. You know, I remember nervous to have my mom read something I wrote. And now I get, you know, dozens of, I never call them fan mails because some people are definitely not your fans, but I get a lot of feedback, let's say, all day long. And you have to be able to roll with it no matter what it is.
So how is your mom? There's two types of moms. There's mom that will tell you what you need to hear, and then there's moms that'll tell you what you want to hear. And my mom, bless her soul, would tell me that a science project was fantastic. I take it to school and find out that it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how was your mom on feedback? What was the barometer there?
I didn't give her a ton to read. Both of my parents unfortunately passed away before I even got a publishing deal. My mom actually did read The Gray Man before my agent, and she was super positive about it. But this wasn't, you know, I wasn't a writer. My parents never knew me as a writer. They knew me as a guy that liked to piddle around, and I wrote some short stories and stuff like that. But
how very Southern of you to piddle.
Yeah, I was a piddler. And now I sign contracts, so I can't piddle. I have to generate 150,000 words or whatever, but otherwise I still would.
Yeah. You get to the point where Court Gentry starts taking off, and then you have to make some sort of a decision. Do I do both of these things? Do I write and keep my day job, or is it time to let go of that day job and take a shot downfield? How scary was that?
It was a very stark decision point in my life, and the decision was basically made for me because I signed on to do two more Gray Man books, and I was asked if I was interested in trying some ghostwriting, which is where you basically write a book and somebody else's name is on it, because that person has a more prominent name. And so I was getting these offers, and none of them were for a lot of money. I mean, this was not quit your day job money, but I just realized there was no way I was going to be able to write two books a year and continue with my job. So I put my notice in, and I told myself I had about a year of money, you know, that I could make this work for a year. But within just a couple of months, my first book, The Gray Man, sold to Hollywood, and that was probably just for a three-year option was probably 2.5 times what I got paid to write the book in the first place. So that bought me some more time, and then things kicked off.
Now, just Court Gentry, that character or the Gray Man series, there's a movie option still out there, right? We may still see him.
Yeah, it's gone beyond the option stage. Sony's actually purchased it outright, so they own it, and they have a script. It's the 5th script that's been written for it over the past 10 years. There's the second studio, but the 5th script. So I don't, you know, it hasn't been greenlit. It's still in the, you know, sort of the pre-production development stage.
Joining us today is New York Times bestselling author Mark Graney. He joins us today, and we're going to talk about soccer in just a few minutes. He's played, and he loves the game of soccer, but it's not too often you get someone that has rubbed elbows with a guy named Tom Clancy. So here you are in your first publishing deal, and Tom Clancy, perhaps, does he come calling, or is this a networking thing where a Providence kind of jumps in?
The latter, very much the latter. I just turned in my third Gray Man book. It hadn't come out yet. I hadn't even gotten any editor feedback or whatever. And I got a call from my agent, and he said, "Are you sitting down?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, are you interested in writing a book with Tom Clancy?" And I was terrified of the prospect. But I knew that I would never work in this town again if I said no to something like that. So what had happened was the guy who edits the Gray Man books, my publisher, Tom Colgan, was also Tom Clancy's editor, and Tom was looking for a new co-author, and Tom Colgan, my editor, thought of me. And it wasn't like, you know, you immediately had the job or anything like that. I ended up sort of trying out for it. I was a big, huge Clancy fan my entire life, and I had all his first editions just because I bought them, or my dad bought them for me when they came out. So I boned up a little bit just to remind myself some of these books I hadn't read in 20 years, and then I wrote maybe 100 pages just to show that I knew who the characters were and how they talked to each other and all that other stuff. And then within a few months, I was working with him.
So you've got, then on this continuum, you've got Court Gentry, who you've got, your third book is coming out soon. And then all of a sudden, you're in the mix writing about Jack Ryan. Does Court go on hiatus for a little bit, or are you continuing to work on both?
Let's see how the first year, it was a very tight time schedule. And I had a Gray Man book, which I still finished. So there was the first couple of years, I did Gray Man and Clancy together. And then Tom Clancy unfortunately passed away at the end of 2013. We had just finished our third book together. And then his family hired me to continue the series, and they wanted me to do two books in 2014, sort of a summer book that's about one of the characters, and then the big Christmas book, which was about Jack Ryan. So I agreed to do that. So I didn't do any Gray Man that year, but I've done virtually two books a year for the last 10 years.
So you go from getting this introduction with Tom Clancy, and from what you're telling me with all the reading that you've done and boning up on the work, that it was probably nerve-wracking, and you didn't want to let, I guess, someone that you looked up to, you didn't want to let them down with your work. And you go from that, Tom passes away. How did you feel about the family coming to you saying, can you continue Tom's work?
When I was first asked to write with Clancy, I did not feel in any way, shape, or form like I had earned that right, you know. But I worked really hard to you know, it's like I'm here somehow. I don't really understand it, but I'm not going to screw it up. When Tom died and the family decided to continue the series, I felt then that I was the right guy for the job. I would have been very upset if they went to somebody else because I'd done three. You know, I'd spent some time with Tom, and I felt like I had it down, and I saw where things were going. There is a story arc through these, you know, to some degree. So I was a confident Tom Clancy style writer by the fourth book, but not at first, not by a long shot.
A couple of years ago, you decided to step away from that franchise. What prompted that?
I did 7 Tom Clancy books in 6 years. They're big books. They're roughly 200,000 words, between 175 to 200,000. So,
and no pictures either, right?
No pictures. I think there's like 3 maps on each one or something, but it doesn't really add the bulk of it. And the writing adds the bulk. So I had done 7 in 6 years. I almost didn't do the 7th because I had told my editor, I was like, I feel like I've told all the stories that I, you know, that I can tell this rapidly. And I knew once I stepped away that the train would keep on moving and I couldn't necessarily get back on. But I did a 7th one, and I was very proud of the 7th one, which came out in December of 2016. But I just, at that point, I just felt like they should get somebody fresher. It wasn't about the money. It was just about, like, I do have my own stuff, you know, I wanted to work on Gray Man series, but other stuff as well. And then also I just felt like I'd told all the Clancy stories, and they were going to lose their freshness very quickly.
One last question, and you're probably in the best shape of your life, and you could probably break me in half, but I've got to ask you this question. You've probably been asked this a million times. Are you involved at all in the Jack Ryan Amazon series?
Oh, yeah. No, I am not. It's a really complicated situation to where the estate doesn't own the name in Hollywood of Jack Ryan. So those books, and then there's been the movie Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit or whatever. Those are completely aside from the Amazon series and from the books and stuff like that. So I think Paramount owns the name Jack Ryan. So I am not involved. They did reach out to me, you know, but it seemed like, my guess was they wanted me to sort of like promote their stuff or whatever. And I like it. I really like the John Krasinski stuff. I think it's fantastic.
By the way, thank you, because you could have very easily gone with it. You know, if I had a nickel for every time somebody asked me that, I wouldn't have to write another book.
I have been asked. Yeah, that's true. I've been asked.
Mark Graney joins us, New York Times bestselling author, and we want to talk about some more of the work in a moment. But I mean, let's veer off, or I guess veer to the subject at hand, and that's soccer. And of course, being an author and being in international studies, and in your Gray Man series, you've had to do a lot of research, which has required a lot of travel. Let's talk about that travel maybe in a few moments. But before that, let's rewind the clock back to the beginnings. Where does your soccer story begin for you, playing, watching, loving the game?
Actually, even before I started playing, I really loved this show, and you might not be old enough to remember it, but it was on PBS on Saturdays.
Soccer made in Germany.
Yeah.
High five.
You remember the
Toby Charles.
Yeah.
It's a penalty.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I was obsessed with that show. and honestly, what I liked about it, because I didn't really know that much about soccer, I liked the cops or the soldiers with the German shepherds that line the... you remember that?
Yeah. Yes.
It always looked miserably like wet and cold, and there were these really tough-looking German shepherds on... You know, like, you were not running on that field streaking. There was no way.
No.
But I love that show, and so I told my parents I wanted to play soccer. And the first soccer practice I went to, I came in blue jeans. Yeah. And the coach was like, hey, don't wear blue jeans to soccer practice. So I felt like I learned something. I made a quantum leap on day one.
Probably the best slide tackler, because no strawberries.
Yes. Well, I'd done a lot of slide tackling in elementary school at recess. So I was like, I think I've got the gimmick of how to do this. And then pretty quickly, I'm a big guy. So yeah, and I was even when I was 10 or whatever. So they put big guys in goal. Maybe you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And they're like, you know, who knows if he has any talent, but this ball will bang off his face and we'll save a few shots that way.
My coach told me once it takes me 2 trips to haul tail. That's how slow it is. But so you started out, you played in goal, and from what I've seen out at the local pickup fields and out at the complexes, you're still playing to this day, huh?
I'm not playing that much. I have a ankle injury, which actually came from soccer about 20 years ago. I do kick it around. Some still. I lived in Miami for a couple of years, so I didn't play for a long time. I played in high school and then didn't play for 10 years, and I was in my early 30s, and I was living in Miami, and I would go to these fields and jog, and there were these guys, these islanders, I guess, from the Caribbean or Bahamas or Haiti or whatever, and they would have these pickup games, and I started playing with them one time, and I was defender. They didn't want me shooting the ball.
Yeah.
And I did shoot one from distance and scored. And then I shot again. And I remember the guy turns around and looks at me on my team. He's like, "Christmas comes but once a year, man. Don't shoot again." I was like, "All right, you got it." So it was my role to be the big guy in the back, the hatchet man. And but I fell back in love with the game, and I moved back to Memphis a year or two later, and found out about GMSA, the local league, and then just became obsessed with it. Played on two or three teams, coached, did everything.
It's a big league, but I think I can speak for this universally that even in big leagues, it's still a small soccer family.
Everybody
likes each other. Now, you may try to crack an ankle, but after the match, go have something to drink.
Oh, yeah. It was always fun because my team, like, we had a reputation for being kind of rough and tumble, but everybody wanted to get on our team. It's like they'd be so mad at us during the game, and then afterwards, you know, we'd go somewhere drinking, and they'd be like, "Hey, can we get on the rage?" And I always thought that was a fun aspect of the sport. You know, it's like it was mostly left on the field.
I hate that I missed having you on the indoor team. I think you were away and busy. This was like 2011. You were just buried in writing. We had an indoor team that was a spinoff of Rage called Slightly Peeved because we were Rage Light.
I like it.
But I think maybe from a literary standpoint, that would have been up your alley.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed that.
Mark Graney joins us, New York Times bestselling author here on the podcast. So you've done a lot of travel with research with Court Gentry, and with that, I guess, maybe some opportunities to see some matches overseas. Did you ever go see some soccer made in Germany or elsewhere?
You know, and I've been to Germany multiple times. I've never been to a Bundesliga match there. I've seen, really the only places I've seen foreign soccer is like in Central America. I travel a lot in the U.S., so I've seen D.C. United 25 times. I've seen the Red Bulls. I've seen New York FC. I've seen Houston and Dallas.
Who do you follow?
I'm kind of a D.C. United fan. I think LAFC is, and not LAFC is obviously very good, but Atlanta United is, I'm so fascinated by the fact that they started, they were bigger than anybody else. And it just really makes me happy is because I'm a guy that grew up when, you know, NASL didn't make it in America. And
it's Atlanta Chiefs, I think. Maybe they had another team in the NASL days down in Atlanta that didn't work, but they sure do fill up that dome now, though.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible! And obviously they're a fun team to watch. So I've got to get to, you know, I live 4 hours from Atlanta, or well, 6 hours from Atlanta. It's an hour long flight, and I haven't been to a match there, unfortunately. But I do like to go. You know, I wish we, you know, had an MLS team. We have a great team now that just started here in Memphis. Unfortunately, I've traveled the entire first 6 months of the year, so. Other than seeing, you know, when the Colorado Rapids played last year, that was the only match I've seen at AutoZone Park.
Yeah, the Tim Howard match. So Central America, that is definitely not dull. That's got to be an exciting culture.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was in Guatemala and El Salvador, and it's so much fun. I don't know if fun's the word. They throw things on the field to an extreme that you wouldn't believe. So there were really, really high barbed wire fences. And as the trainer would come out to cart a guy off the field, men with shields would come and like hold the shields over the trainers because people were trying to hit the trainers with like rubber Pepsi bottles and stuff like that. They would let them have glass for good reason. And I remember, because I speak Spanish, I remember them carrying a guy off the field on a litter from the other team. And the guy next to me in the stands, he said, "Saca la basura afuera," which means take out the trash. So it was like carrying the guy off the field. He's like, "Take out the trash." And I was laughing so hard, I was like, "Well, this is an experience."
So El Salvador, Guatemala. I would guess as much as we see over in Europe, as much of it is the culture. Soccer's life down there too.
Oh, absolutely. The you know, everybody's wearing the jerseys. You know, it was just funny. I'd be in Guatemala and you'd see like a, you know, 5-year-old street kid wearing a Stoichkov jersey. You know, it's like. Not even Guatemala or whatever. But it was a lot of fun. And of course the national team, I've seen the U.S. national team a few times, in different places. You know, their national team down there, those are gods. Those are deities to the people that live there.
Mark Graney joining us, New York Times bestselling author. We're talking a little bit of soccer, finding out that, yeah, he's a D.C. United guy. And before we move on, what do you think about Rooney's time with D.C. United? Success, not success?
I think it was successful. I mean, I'd like to hear what you think about it. But, I thought he was good. I mean, it wasn't as, you know, as flashy maybe as some of the others. But I just felt like he came with the right attitude. Like, he wasn't, you know, like on the beach all the time or anything like that. You remember when Lothar Matthäus, I mean, I'm going way back 20 years ago, you know, one of the best German players came to America, and he didn't do very well at all, because he's like, oh man, they're still running around and kicking it. I think I just came over here to
get some sun.
To get some sun.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you have Matthäus, and then you had, I thought Lampard mm-hmm. didn't live up to expectations mm-hmm. when he came over. I think Rooney actually, for the short term that he was here, they had a new stadium. Yeah. They needed somebody to market that. I thought he was the right guy at the right time.
Right, right. But his work rate was good. Yeah. You know, it's like on the field, it's like, I respect you if you're out there trying, because that was all I was ever able to do. So, and you know, I guess you could say the same thing about Beckham. I mean, Beckham was it was all a flash, and it was all about, you know, getting him there. But, you know, Rooney's the guy, the scrappy player that'll, you know, bang out the goals and go back for it and do what he had to do.
So you spent some time in Miami. Now Beckham's got that club starting next year in Fort Lauderdale that's going to be Inter Miami. Are you going to go try to catch a match down
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. So I was a huge fan. The Miami Fusion was still in existence. It was I left Miami the year before they went all the way, and, you know, almost all the way to, you know, they were real far in the playoffs. So they weren't that great a team when I was there. But the Ray Hudson, who was their commentator, and then he became their coach the next year. And I just thought that was so funny, because he was, you know, the color commentator guy becomes the coach, and I'm like, well, that's never gonna work, and it absolutely worked for a certain period of time, anyhow.
And I think he coached a little bit further on in MLS.
Yeah, I think that's right. It was sad the Fusion didn't make it. You know, they were really far. So Fort Lauderdale's 30 miles from Miami. Yeah. I think you were asking a lot to get a lot of the Latin people to come up to Fort Lauderdale to these matches. But they played at this place called Lockhart Stadium, which is not a huge stadium, but it was a really nice place to go. And I went to every match I could. You could get into a match for $8.
Wow.
And I would go to the matches, and I'd spend four times that on, you know, on Spanish food, you know, on arepas and other, you know, like food they had, Cuban food down there.
And they're going to play at Lockhart, I think, temporarily, Mark, mm-hmm. and then eventually, if they can get a stadium deal figured out. That seems like that's kind of nebulous right now. But mm-hmm. It's great to have. They've got that team in Orlando, but it will be great down in Miami, especially with Beckham and all he knows on marketing.
That'll and those competitions are great when you have the cities close enough to each other, you know, Portland and Seattle, and, you know, all those different ones. It's the two New York teams. You know, it's kind of fun to have that if your market will support it.
They got
to
come up with a different name though than the Sunshine Derby. That just doesn't sound like there's much anger. The Sunshine Derby,
like a golf outing.
Yeah, very much so. Mark Graney joining us now. I want to talk just a little bit more about Court Gentry. Court's going strong. You're 10 years in. You got Mission Critical that came out this year, and then you had a standalone book called Red Metal, which is not a Court Gentry book, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I had a book that came out in July that I co-authored with a then active duty Marine Lieutenant Colonel, and we worked on it for years. We researched all over the world, and it was a big military thriller. To everyone's surprise, apparently, it landed on the New York Times list. It did really, really well. Hopefully, there will be a sequel to that. It's a book that takes a long time to write, because it was a big 215,000 word, almost 700 page novel about a war between Russia and NATO. And but we're talking about doing another one. I hope we do at some point. And it was a good experience.
And you've got Court Gentry coming back in 2020.
Yeah, the book's called 1 Minute Out, and it comes out February the 18th of 2020, and it's the ninth book in the Gray Man series.
How I've always wanted to ask you this is, how often, or what percentage of control do you have over the title? Because you got some real kick butt titles in some of these books.
Thank you. I think there were two Gray Man titles that weren't mine, and I had titles, but then the marketing people thought, I mean, and I don't think about this, but sometimes they'll be like, listen, 30% of your readership is women, and this title isn't going to, you know, register well with women for one reason or another. And I'm like, okay, you guys know this stuff, I don't, so we go with different ones. 1 Minute Out was my title. Mission Critical was my title. Gunmetal Gray was my title. You know, the most recent ones are Agent in Place was not my original title, but I did come up with it when they didn't like my original title.
How much the military and first responders are in your readership? Because I've noticed in your books, you go to great lengths to avoid even people nitpicking with criticism of the weapon selection and the description of the weapons. You go to great lengths to make sure that it's not just accurate, but it's very precise.
I like that in books. I mean, obviously you can overdo it, and I try not to overdo it, but I like it in books because you want to, these are fantastical stories, you know, these, you know, solo spies going around the world and doing this and that, you know, and so there's a lot of suspension of disbelief that's necessary. So I try and put in a lot of like hard, cold details to sell the story. So that's what that's all about. And I do get things wrong every now and then. You know, I'll get the muzzle velocity wrong of some rifle, and you'll get 100 emails. You know, you don't know anything about guns, and I'm always laughing because I'm like, there were 73 other details about that gun that I didn't get right. It's like, it's amazing that I just, without knowing a thing about guns, I got that right. But yeah, sometimes you get things wrong, and boy, you hear about them.
So that's where at least a little bit of a thick skin could probably
help.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's gotten a lot thicker.
Yeah, good, good. I want people to be able to go find your book. I know they can find it on Amazon, but where else can they find out more about you, find out about your books?
Well, I'm on social media, Mark Graney Books, and I also have a website, markgraneybooks.com, and you can go there. Always good to go to independent bookstores. Here in Memphis, there's a place called Novel, and they have signed copies of my books, and you can buy it there, or you can call them, and they can ship them to you. But yeah, also Amazon. And hopefully you can find it wherever you look.
That's kind of a big deal to you. I've noticed that you've always tried to find some of the independent booksellers to go do a lot of your signings. They're a dying breed, aren't they?
Yeah, they're coming back. Yeah. Believe it or not, they've the last couple of years that the trend has been reversed, so it makes me very, very happy. But yeah, I'll go do a signing at a bookstore in Scottsdale, Arizona, and 100 and something people show up, and you know that doesn't necessarily happen. You know, without a really good bookstore that cares about books and cares about their customers, and you know that might not happen as much at a chain store.
Yeah. Okay. Mark, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Thank you for sharing your soccer story and telling us a bit more about what you got coming up in the hopper as well. Just fascinating stuff. And congratulations on 10 years on Court. And here's to another 10 years or however many more years you want the story of Court Gentry to continue.
Thanks so much, Tim. This was fun. I appreciate it.
More next on My Three Subs, A Soccer Odyssey.
I love talking soccer, but I also love talking about real estate, too. And people ask me about both a lot. And one of the big questions I get in real estate is, how's the housing market? The housing market looks great, and interest rates are near historical lows. And really, it all comes down to, when is the time right for you? If you're ready to make your move, give me a call. Tim Van Horn at Cry Like Realtors. 901-756-8900 is my office number. Brody, can I give him my cell number? Oh, I can. Okay. 901-262-5000. That's my cell phone. You can also go to my website, timvanhorn.com. I can help you with your move around the block, around the city, around the state, and even around the world, too. I have a network of relocation certified agents just ready to help you. They are dying for your business, and I can put you in touch with those. All it takes is pick up the phone, give me a call. 901-756-8900. That's my office number. You can call me at my cell, 901-262-5000. Or just go online. Check me out at timvanhorn.com. That's timvanhorn.com with Cry Like Realtors.
This is My Three Subs, A Soccer Odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
Well, the results are in. Of course, it's the end of the year, which means it's the start of award season.
Yes.
Everybody gets a pat on the back. You get an award. You get an award.
Everybody gets an award.
You know who doesn't get an award this year, though? Virgil van Dijk.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
Is that too soon? Is it too soon, Tim? Because that's a controversial kind of thing. We're talking like tenths of points here.
It was one of the closest. In fact, it was the closest vote between first and second in the 21st century. But the Ballon d'Or results are in. And it looks like Virgil's going to be stuck with a nice consolation prize of winning the Champions League. That doesn't suck.
Yeah, it doesn't suck at all. But it's for the sixth time goes to Lionel Messi.
Messi, and here's the great thing about Messi. As you mentioned, it's his sixth time. I thought Virgil van Dijk could not have done anything differently or played any better this year, but still, it wasn't good enough for Messi, who I thought did not have his best season.
I think what it boils down to, his name is Lionel Messi. And we talked about this in the second, or the first half there, where we're sitting here back and forth about, is Lionel Messi back? Obviously, Lionel Messi being Lionel Messi and scoring in that 86th minute, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, he's still doing what he does. He's still Lionel Messi at the end of the day. I don't think they're wrong, but I don't think that they're right in giving it to Lionel Messi.
It was, as I mentioned, it was the closest of the 21st century. Virgil van Dijk comes in second. Ronaldo doesn't even show up for this. I guess he kind of had an
inkling. He's busy looking in the mirror.
Well, you know what he actually was? He was actually at a different award ceremony. I kid you not. He was at a ceremony honoring Italy's best 11 of the past year, and he was in the best 11, so he went to accept an award there, which, you know, if I knew that I was going to be accepting an award rather than being up for an award, I would probably go.
Yeah, I would go to the one I'm getting one.
Yeah.
Yeah, guaranteed.
But I got to tip the cap, by the way, to Luka Modric, who was last year's Ballon d'Or winner, showed up, was very gracious. Of course, you know, they pretty much battle each other twice a year in La Liga. Of course, he's with Real Madrid. So just a first-class guy handing that over to Messi. And Messi's actually a pretty decent guy. He stays low-key. You don't hear him getting in trouble. But I will say this as a criticism to him. He kind of ducks in and out of the Argentina national team whenever he wants. And that doesn't seem like... That doesn't seem very cool to me, but it seemed like with the voters, they didn't care just enough to be able to nudge him over the finish line for this one.
I think he looks at the national team like, oh, it's there. If I want to play, I'll play. You know, that kind of thing. If they need me, I'll play. Well, they need you more often than not, Messi.
Even if he wins a couple of more, I wonder if he will always feel like he's in Diego Maradona's shadow because he's never won the World Cup.
Mm, that good point. But speaking of the Ballon d'Or, how about Megan Rapinoe?
Megan Rapinoe wins the second
ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, she was a World Cup winner again.
Again.
This is two in a row. I believe her swan song will probably come next year in the Olympics. I think she's going to be wrapping that up.
I think that's what you see most of the women's national team, kind of the philosophy there with Megan Rapinoe and then Carly Lloyd. I imagine that she's probably thinking about, you know what, let's win the gold in the Olympics and then I'll hang up the cleats kind of thing. I just don't see the core, like the Wheaties box women's national team, if you will, going much further than what we've seen already.
By the way, speaking of that, I believe Alex Morgan came in third in the balloting this year.
I think you could have listed that entire team,
you
know, our women's national team in the Ballon d'Or.
And then Bronze, who she plays with England, you would have thought with a name like Bronze, she would have come in third, but actually she took the silver. She came in second.
Well, you know, can't be too on the nose.
Listen, very, very excited. It's always great to see an American win these awards.
Yeah,
I'll be even more excited as more international players on the women's side are more competitive for that contest, because that means the women's game is growing. And if the women's game is growing, you know, there's been discussion about equal pay and building leagues. I think as the rest of the world gets more competitive, I think that becomes more of a reality. So that's exciting, because I love watching women's soccer, because unlike basketball, you don't have that height issue.
Right.
You have determination, you have skill, you have speed. So congratulations to Megan on that.
I think watching women's national or U.S. national team versus the world is a completely different form of soccer. Our team is very fast and they play very it's a skill ball kind of thing where they move the ball very well, and I love watching our team play because it is a clinic every single time. And that being said, you are starting to see that level rise a little bit, namely in the Netherlands. And
I think England with their women's Premier League has begun to develop further.
Right.
And also, I think you have to give credit to Phil Neville, the manager of the women's national team in England. I think he's done a good job with, you know, he got them to the semifinals of the Women's World Cup. So it's growing over there as well, where it had been lagging behind. So, you know, a lot of respect, a lot of credit to the women's side. Congratulations to Megan Rapinoe. Congratulations to Lionel Messi as well, picking up his sixth. Maybe some of that was on reputation, but again, he continues to be a consistent goal scorer. Maybe the Champions League flash of Virgil van Dijk just wasn't enough. But as for me, I thought there was nothing more that van Dijk could have done to have won it. So unless Messi breaks a leg next year, I think that's going to be hard to beat, because I don't know how much better Van Dijk can get, because I think he's on his top on top of his game right now.
I think so too. Now, speaking of, we've got a little tie-in with our next little bit of news.
Yeah, we have a little bit of breaking news. I got a push notification just a few moments ago, and we talk about Van Dijk in the Premier League and being a terrific player, but we've got some Premier League news. You know, just a couple minutes ago before the break, we were talking about Rickarlison being a transfer target. Well, right. He just got a 12-month extension at Everton on a deal which he already still had 4 years left on.
Do you think that this hurts that transfer kind of mindset, or does it help the transfer mindset? Meaning, does it make him more or less valuable to other clubs?
May I share my range of emotions with you?
Yes.
Okay, when I see this push notification, I'm thinking like, oh crap, you know, we just talked about this. I've just been totally contradicted. But then I thought, well, hang on a second, Eager McBeaver. Slow this thing down. Maybe pump the brakes, Van Horn. Because
Eager McBeaver.
I went in third person there. I think about this for a second, and I think that, okay, well, he's just added a year to his deal. If anything, I think what Everton has done is very smart. I think by shoring him up for the next 5 seasons, they say, hey, we are committed to this guy. So if you come at us with a transfer deal, you better sweeten the pot even more, because you're going to have to overcome our loyalty. And right now, I'm patting my hand on the heart. You have to overcome our loyalty to Rickarlison to be able to pry. In fact, you're going to have to pry him away from our cold, dead hands, which basically means up the price another £20 million.
Oh, we love him so much, but if the price is right, we'll still let him go.
I think in the long run, I think Everton makes that money back, and then some. At some point, I think he does go. It may be delayed a little bit longer than the January transfer window, because if Marco Silva leaves as manager, if they bring in David Moyes or if they bring in somebody else that he likes, perhaps he's a little more hesitant. Maybe he wants to stick around and see how this is going to play out. Absolutely. And we'll keep a very close eye on that. And speaking of Everton and U.S. men's national team legend Tim Howard, as reported in The Athletic on their website.
Now, this is still quote-unquote rumor.
Right.
Right? Cat hasn't been let out of the bag all the way.
Here's the story from The Athletic. They say that Tim Howard, come the first of the year, once his MLS contract runs out, will be named general manager of Memphis 901 FC of the USL Championship. I take it you like that decision.
I love this.
I have reached out, by the way, to Craig Unger, the president of 901 FC, and I have not gotten a response yet. I will tell you, typically, he responds. I think perhaps he's either swamped or just has not had the time to respond. So don't take that as we're getting stonewalled. Right, exactly. Right. I think just the timing of it, he hasn't had time to get back. But really, the story goes that at the beginning of the year, he is supposed to be named. This is per a source from The Athletic.
Right.
Per a source. So he's supposed to become the general manager. I will tell you, when I went down to the Brass Door downtown Memphis when they had their fan forum.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He was very, very proactive in speaking to the audience on what the expectations are, what they expect to do in 2020 on
very
player acquisitions.
Very GM-ly of you.
And I also think at the first of the year, you're going to see some new personnel named publicly. There were some folks down at the Brass Door that I believe are going to be assisting Tim Howard in the years to come if he is general manager. Either way, I believe as a minority owner of the team, and now that his playing days are over, he is fully committed to making this work. I mean, can you find anybody on the face of the earth that has ever said, hey, you know, Tim Howard just kind of half-asses this?
Yeah, no.
He full-asses everything.
Right, and believe me, he's a beast of a man. And we talk about bouncing quarters off of him.
So let me say this. Even though we haven't had a response from the team yet, I think it's great publicity for the team. I don't think you can buy this kind of publicity because, one, The Athletic is talking about it. Other local sources are talking about it. We are talking about it. And guess who's getting this message out there?
Well, we are. But the thing is that it's getting into the ears of these potentials
Exactly.
And that's what I think more important. When especially we had Coach Mulqueen in here, and he's talking about how Landon Donovan is going to be this new head coach over at San Diego, right?
Right.
And how David Villa is going to be involved in Queens and in 2020, and how that's going to be hard now to pull players. Well, guess what? We got the best damn player on the face of the planet. I'm spilling the beans here. When it comes down to it, because I would love to play for a national icon when it comes to soccer, like Tim Howard.
If this is the case, and again, we don't have this confirmed from the team.
Just the rumor of it.
I think it's a huge deal for players if they're considering where to go. You have David Villa, who is going to be a lead investor in Queensborough FC, who start in 2021, which is a great location to go. There's a lot of energy in New York. You've got Landon Donovan, who's going to be coach, but also I think that's our harder. And I believe what's his job? He has a second title. It's so, not general manager,
but he's also the VP of soccer operations.
Okay, so you've got Landon Donovan in San Diego with great weather. You have another legend out there, but then you have Tim Howard in Memphis. If he is the general manager, here's how I think this is an advantage for Memphis. And you're thinking, wait, well, San Diego's got great weather. They've got Landon Donovan. New York has, David Villa in Queensborough. Let me tell you why I think this is a great situation for Memphis if this is the case.
Go ahead, and now I'll throw one on too.
I love Landon Donovan. I have the utmost respect for him. He took a chance. He went overseas and played some, in fact, multiple times. His credentials cannot be questioned on what a great player he has been for club and country. Cannot question that at all.
No.
He is now working on his coaching license. He may turn out to be a terrific coach. But you know what? On a Saturday night, while Landon Donovan is coaching San Diego, Loyal, on a Saturday night, you know what he's not doing? He's not up in the... He's not in the skyboxes.
Right.
He's not in the crowd
shaking
hands. He's not talking to sponsors. You know who is doing that? Tim Howard will be able to do that because he has his own staff. He has a coach that's taking care of that on the field. So he is able to do general manager things. And believe me, if you're approached by Tim Howard and you're a sponsor and you know who Tim Howard is.
First of all, it's hard not to. The man's a beast.
Yeah.
Okay, the man is very brooding. Okay? He walks in and his presence is felt. He's much like The Rock when The Rock rolls through and you're like, wow, that's a very manly man. That's how Tim Howard approaches. Here's my take on Landon Donovan. Okay? With being the VP of soccer ops and the head coach, I think that's too much. His hands are too full. As a player, I would look at that and go, how much are you investing in me as a player? This is the USL, okay? It's not the MLS. There is no relegation system. There's no, that system isn't in place in the States yet. And we can talk about that at a later date, okay? But with that being said, how much time are you investing in me as the player, Landon Donovan? However, when Tim Howard goes to that same player, yes, same high dollar player and everything like that, Tim Howard's going to go, not only am I going to look at you, but also the program, but I've got a head coach that's invested in you as well.
And that's the Tim Howard DNA. When you watch him play, whether it be for Metro Stars, Manchester United, for Everton, Colorado Rapids, whenever U.S. men's national team, when you watch the defense. He's had some terrific defenders in front of him.
Sure.
There's still no doubt who runs the show out there.
Absolutely.
When something falls short of his expectations, he's going to let you know.
Yep.
He will let you know. In fact, they have to cut the camera away pretty quickly if you fall short of his expectations.
Right.
And that's what you're going to get.
But you know where you stand.
You know exactly where you stand.
Right.
In fact, what was it, Tim Mulqueen, the head coach of the team, that said he and Tim Howard have the same theory when it comes to dealing with people?
Right.
It's better to give one to the head than two to the chest.
Exactly. Well, and I think as a GM run Tim Howard show, what you're going to see is everybody has their job. As long as you're doing your job, fine. He's your best friend. Now, you better keep doing your job up to the expectations of a Tim Howard expectation, which could be very lofty. But as long as you're doing it, you're fine. He's going to be your best friend.
Before, and I don't want to stray too far away from David Villa either, because I'm very curious to see what his role is going to be. How active will he be in reaching out to advertising partners? Will he play a role in being a sporting director or a consultant to the sporting director. It's going to be interesting. But again, that's 2021. That's still on the shelf.
Yeah, that's...
But the USL has such an interesting dynamic now because you have, don't forget, let's have, you know, Didier Drogba has had a big role in Phoenix. And at first blush, you think, okay, well, this is a vanity project. Absolutely not.
No.
This is a very good league. It's a very competitive league. If you're not good enough, you're gone from this league.
Look at the West. I mean, the West was so competitive and it was so fun to watch what was happening in the West. Not taking anything away from the East. Now, Memphis and Louisville and Pittsburgh.
And Nashville, yeah.
And Indy, even. Yeah. I mean, that was some really high-level soccer that was being played. And everybody's like, well, the score was so low. That means there was a good defense on the field.
Well,
great goaltending.
If you went to the Memphis Pittsburgh match, you saw within 30 yards of goal, Pittsburgh was not going to allow a Memphis player to get a shot off. They were going to foul, and they were going to foul hard.
And
it was as Coach Mulqueen said, and I go keep turning back to him because
he's
brilliant,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's a man's league.
Yeah, and it's a very fun league to have these high powered, you know, basically players involved with this. Gives it not only validity, but makes it so much more competitive.
Now, then the question, and maybe this is a rhetorical question. I love saying rhetorical because it makes me sound smarter than I truly am. The rhetorical question is, if there's a struggle in San Diego, how quick of a hook does Landon Donovan give himself before he steps aside?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, you're your own worst enemy. That's what I'm saying. His hands are way too full, and it's too contradictive of himself. It would be just like a player coach. Do you pull yourself? Do you put yourself in the starting lineup? Thanks, coach. You just took my spot.
You know, if that ever came down to it, I guess if I were in his shoes, I guess I would pull the trigger because I would want to save my legacy. Yeah. But I'd also give myself a hell of a severance package, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Your own worst enemy. And the public's eye, you're the own worst enemy, too. Oh, boy, that's not a lose-lose situation, Landon Donovan. I'm sorry, it is.
You almost have to be... I don't know if he has to win it all, but he's got to make a little bit of a run in the playoffs,
yep,
I think, in the West. And that's going to be tricky because look at Real Monarchs this past year. They were excellent. Of course, Phoenix was terrific as well. Reno was no pushover.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in 2020. And then when Queensboro jumps in 2021, I think that's going to be special as well. Have we pretty much covered all the ground?
How many guitars is Tim Howard going to smash? And how many smash themselves because they don't want to get chunked over the amp like that?
Oh, that's a good question for 2020. Maybe that's an over-under. Can we go to the sports books on that?
Anyway, if you want to reach out to us, how many over-under guitar smashes does Tim Howard do next season in 2020 as the new GM? There, we said it. And what questions would you want to ask the GM of Tim Howard, the Memphis 901 FC new GM, if he is such... you can hit us up on Gmail. We're at my3subspodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at my3subspodcast.
And please like us. Yes, please friend us. Please add us because it does a lot for our ego. We sleep much better at night when you do that. You know, a big thanks to Mark Graney, who I think, you know, he's gotten kind of jacked in the gym. I think he would be one heck of a guitar smasher next year.
Yeah.
We want to thank Mark Graney for talking about his Gray Man series and working with Tom Clancy and sharing his love of soccer. And Brody, thanks for making sure all the microphones are working. And,
I push buttons real good.
And for your insight, this is a blast. My wife loves, she says I come home much happier after a podcast.
It's
she
all
says
after your chest.
I get it all out of my system here. It's good therapy.
You talk about something else other than soccer at the dinner table now, too.
I save copays on doctor's visits. Yeah, it is so therapeutic for me. Yeah. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors, easeofapproval.com, and of course, Financial Wealth Services and Hal Downing there. And we want to thank you, the listener. Hey, tell your friends, tell your family. Heck, tell your enemies, too. Maybe they'll become your friends to go to my3subspodcast.com and check us out. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you again real soon.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more of My Three Subs podcast, A Soccer Odyssey, at 1019kissfm.com and on the iHeartRadio app. The Watchers have observed. The council has convened. The gathering of geeks converges, and they're set to discuss everything happening in the geekdom.
Tank locked, loaded. Get the latest on everything in the Geek Universe with the Geek Patrol.
The Geek Patrol is on Geek Tank Radio.
That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
This is a KISS original. Only on 101.9 KISSFM.com.